All right. Good morning. How's everybody doing this morning? Good? Great. I want to give a quick introduction to myself. So my name is Thomas Ruttinger. I'm a program manager in the Windows Server and System Center Division in engineering. The team I'm working most of my time with is called the Customer Architecture and Technology Team. Short term is called CAT Team. We're plugged into various different product teams, and we're bridging the gap between customers and the engineering teams to do direct influence during the development of the products to make sure that the feedback from customers really do count and get heard on the development table. Today, I'm going to talk about the Cloud OS stack and how to provision that in a high available fashion. I'm going to cover the entire Cloud OS stack, starting by Windows Server, System Center, and then moving up the stack into Windows Azure Pack. What you're going to see and what you're going to find is basically that I'm going to spend the majority of the time on Windows Azure Pack because it's the latest technology that just swapped into the customer hands, because on the other stack, Server, System Center, it's been there for a while and the technologies are very well known, but I'm going to walk through them to make sure we're all on the same page. Actually, this morning, how many of you have been in the keynote? I guess everybody was being in the keynote. I felt it was a very good keynote, and it helped me to bridge and go into this session and do a quick introduction to make sure everybody understands when Microsoft, when we talk about the Cloud OS vision, the journey that we started with it. And I think the keynote has done a tremendous job in helping in bridging this and delivering the message. And I think the key takeaway is really it starts today. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's going to start today. The products that we have rolled out in this wave are there to really provision this Cloud OS stack, and that journey starts today, not tomorrow. Nevertheless, I still want to spend a couple of minutes, make sure we're all on the same page before we dive into the technical part of the session. As you have heard this morning, it's all about change. Change to the IT business, how we do IT. Users start working mobile, different devices. HTML5 is a technology that you're going to see for a lot of portals, applications, with the result of no matter what kind of device you use, if it's a phone, a tablet, a PC, or even a console in your living room. Big data, we heard about big data, lots of storage that we need to manage, and obviously the journey to the cloud. No matter if it is a on-premise cloud that you run in your data center, if you're a service provider or a hoster and you're using our technology stack to offer services, or if you're using the public cloud, Microsoft Azure. And this is really where we see the journey or what we try to deliver. The message is really, no matter if you're a customer, if you're a hoster, or if you're using Microsoft Azure, it's the same technology. It's technology that we help you to really do the transition of your data center to move from pure virtualization that has been around for a while to move to the next journey, moving to a Cloud OS, building a cloud that really gives you the elasticity and the flexibility, the promise of cloud. The products that we deliver to use for on-prem usage have really been proven their experience in the cloud at large scale. And this is really experience that we gained from Microsoft Azure, Office 365, and Bing, just to name a couple of examples. It's really the same technology. It's Windows Server. All of those cloud services run on the same stack, and it's technology that has proven its reliability at big scale, and we bring it on-premise. The learnings, just to call out two of those technologies that really have started their journey in Azure and have been rolled out into the on-prem product, is software-defined storage and software-defined networking, to call out two of those technologies. So with Server 2012, we started the iteration of bringing you software-defined storage, scale-out file server, JBOD technology. And on the software-defined storage, we introduced Windows Network Virtualization in 2012. And with 2012 R2, we enhanced that to deliver a software gateway to enable communication outside of the Windows of the virtualized network. Those are really just a couple of examples that we have brought from Azure into the on-premise product. Well, this conference is called the System Center Universe. So I guess you're going to hear a lot of System Center talk this week. And System Center is our management stack for the cloud OS. And to give a quick overview on this stack here is, as I said in the beginning, Windows Azure Pack is on the edge of the stack. So it delivers the self-service experience. We're going to talk about Azure Pack a lot. We have the traditional System Center components. We have automation, service management, and IT infrastructure provisioning, and the entire management and managing the lifecycle of IT. This is really the benefit that comes with the System Center suite. I don't want to go spend a lot of time on this slide, since you're pretty sure you're all familiar with the capabilities of System Center, the different products that are in System Center, and you're going to hear them anyway when we talk through the components of the stack. The talk today, the technical part is really focusing on delivering the entire Cloud OS stack, server, System Center, and Azure Pack in a high available fashion. Key takeaways that I really want you to take from this session is really understand the components and make up the stack, understand the technologies that should be used to make the stack high available, learn about best practices that we have seen when working with many customers across the globe, and because I really want to avoid or make sure that you know in advance of pitfalls and really avoid them by doing this on your own. Give me a quick hand view. How many of you have really started looking into Windows Azure Pack? And how many of those are running it in production? Okay. Well, I want to start with why should we look on AJ? And traditionally, it's nothing new, right? I mean, obviously, you want to make sure that we bring hardware reliability, load distribution, and this is where we're going to spend the majority of our time because Windows Azure Pack mainly relies on load balancing. Operating system and application patching, you want to make sure that every time you do patching, you're not going to do service audits, right? So you really want to make sure that you can sustain patching, and this is where it goes into the topic of load balancing and guest clustering and file system and other software corruptions. Those are really the drivers for deploying an AJ. I want to start with the technology overview before we dive into specifically in Microsoft Network Load Balancing. The technologies that we have to deploy the stack is, as I said, load balancing, no matter if it is Microsoft NLB or third-party software or hardware load balancers. Just give me a quick indication. How many of you are running hardware load balancers in the environment today? Are they damn expensive? Okay. And obviously, Windows failover clustering, what is along for a long time, right? It was introduced, codename Wolfpack in NT4, so it's been around for a long time. So I'm not going to spend a lot of technical details on failover clustering. Let's start by walking through the stack. And obviously, when I talk about the stack and when we talk about the overall journey to the Cloud OS, there are a lot of components that you have already deployed in your data centers today. It's more like of bringing those components together and let them work together. Introduce that automation, introduce that self-service capabilities, workflows. This is what it is about, because you have, as I said before, a lot of the components already running in your data centers. Hyper-V, as I said before, virtualization has been there for a long time. So the majority of customers are either using Hyper-V, are looking into Hyper-V, or are already in the process of migrating to Hyper-V. I know that there are good sessions around this week for migrations as well. Just give me an indication how many of you are running Hyper-V and how many run Hyper-V? VMware? Okay. It's 50-50. It's not bad. And how many are thinking of migrating to Hyper-V? Okay. Excuse me. Software-defined storage. As I said before, we've done a lot of work in scale-out file server, no matter if you're running them with traditional SAN in the backend or with JBots. It's one of the components that make up the stack, so we require file servicing. Software-defined networking. We started the journey in 2012 to overcome the VLAN limitations. So we're using network virtualization for tenant isolation. SQL Server, it's been around for ages, not gonna talk long about SQL Server. The remote desktop gateway. The remote desktop gateway really enables you to do VM console sessions in Windows Azure Pack. So it's a new capability that was introduced in Azure Pack. Traditionally, the scenario that we're looking here to solve is really that you provision a VM, you give it to an end user, a division, and if he's messing up network configuration, you make sure he can still do self-service without calling you. So that's why we have the remote desktop gateway in the stack. Active Directory Federation services for authentication on the portals, and obviously, the web application proxy if you're a hoster or service provider and you need to publish to external or an enterprise that publishes to external. The management stack, I quickly talked about it. You're not going to see all of the components of System Center on this stack for a simple reason. Some of the components are mandatory and others are just optional. Those are the components that are really mandatory. Obviously, it's Virtual Machine Manager to manage the fabric, manage our hosts. Service Provider Foundation, what is a REST OData REST API that allows the communication between Virtual Machine Manager and the Azure Pack portals so that you can really consume the cloud, the fabric resources. We have Service Management Automation that you have seen in the keynote as well. It's a rich PowerShell-based orchestration engine. Operations Manager. An operations manager has two functions in the stack. Clearly, it's the monitoring piece of the environment, but it is also the usage data. So for infrastructure as a service, the way for us to provide information about usage runs through operations manager. Last but not least, usage information was part of service manager. In the 2012 R2 stack, we moved it out from Service Manager and moved it into a new product called Service Reporting. And last but not least, the optional components. Service Manager, there is an integration into Azure Pack. There's a company called GridPro that does a decent job on integrating Service Manager. But as you've seen, other companies that are here this week as well have done integrations or are about to release them. Orchestrator, if you're still a big fan of the UI, creating your workflows, and you don't want to go away from that, totally fine. We can link Service Management Automation and Orchestrator, so we can basically call Orchestrator Runbox out of SMA, so you can still keep your old development investments and reuse them. So there is no need to reinvest. Last but not least, Azure Site Recovery Manager. If you're running different data centers, if you need to scale across different sites, or if you're a hoster and you want to offer your tenants to provision in multiple sites for compliance reason, for example, we can replicate virtual machines in the stack with Azure Site Recovery. I'm going to talk tomorrow about Windows Azure Pack multi-site deployments, so if that's a topic that you're interested in, make sure you're going to join this as well. As I said before, this is really just a quick split here to make sure we deliver and everybody understands the components and also understands what is the technology to make the specific components available. SQL Server, VMM, Scale-out File Server, Hyper-V, and the NVGRE gateways are all made available by traditional Windows failover clustering. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. It's really just making sure everybody takes that. And the slide title, I just wrote Windows Azure Pack, but traditionally it's listing all of the components that will be made high available by using or by doing load balancing. And we're going to look into a detailed architecture diagram, but I want to make sure you have heard the components before. And this starts with the admin and the tenant side that are the websites, the front ends to consume, but also to create plans and manage the environment. Those are websites. Then we have APIs for admin, tenant, and the tenant public API. This is where the websites do connect to. And then we have the admin and tenant authentication. Admin authentication is a Windows-based authentication, and the tenant authentication is a .NET provider. I talked about ADFS because you can entirely swap those providers by leveraging ADFS. What makes sense for most of the companies to leverage their existing users in Active Directory? We're also having various resource providers that plug into Windows Azure Pack to allow to manage SQL Server, MySQL, to really offer database as a service. Those are just the ones that we deliver out of the box, and those are completely open, meaning you can write your own custom resource providers. I have seen Veeam in the booth. We work with customers that have written their own resource providers for Veeam, for example, to offer backup as a service. And then we have the system center components where we go SMA, there's a typo, just saw, SPF, Service Provider Framework, that we talked about, ADFS, and the web application proxy. Those are all components that are made high available by doing load balancing. And to show you a whole diagram how this really looks, here's a breakout of a scaled out deployment of Windows Azure Pack. For those of you that have already installed and looked into Windows Azure Pack, how many of you have heard about the web platform installer? Okay, it's not a traditional IT pro tool to install software, but I'm sure as an IT pro, you're gonna hear more and more about it in the future. And I'm gonna do a quick demo of this later as well. So Windows Azure Pack gives you two deployment options. One is called an express installation. So all the components that we talked about and that you see here on the architecture diagram are squeezed to a single box. It's great for POCs, great for testing. But for production deployments, it's not really great. You can't scale specific tiers individually. When you start this deployment with two nodes per tier, it will work super fine. But the more load that you have on the system, the more divisions you open up the websites to consume the services, your load will increase. And again, this goes back to the promise of cloud, where you can just scale as you require. And we're going to look into how to deploy this, what's the best option to deploy this, to get really those benefits of scale out, and obviously also scale in as required. This slide here is really just for takeaway. All I want to talk about is in load balancing, you see there's a setting or a tab that is called persistence. This is really good information that I wanted to hand out to you if you're going to deploy this yourself. And this talks about sticky sessions. The result of this, some of the components require that a client session will stick with a specific node in a NLB farm, no matter if it's hardware or software. So you want to make sure that you just take this as information if you hit the time of deploying this, because it definitely may cause some interruptions if you're not following the guidance here. And it's just, if you go and look out on TagNet, it's information that you don't see there for the persistency settings. So it's really inside best practices that we just share with you. And I talked about how to deliver this experience. And probably, hopefully not a surprise, the way to deliver this is Virtual Machine Manager. And there's a component in Virtual Machine Manager called service templates. How many of you have used service templates in VMM? A couple? Okay. It really, the benefit of doing service templates are multiple. Number one is, as I said, you can scale as required, but it also deploys NLB out of the box for you. So if you're not having a hardware load balancer or a third-party software load balancer, it will deploy NLB out of the box for you. It will configure it for you. So there's really little to no knowledge necessary to configure NLB. It's all taken care of for you. Nevertheless, we're going to spend the next 20 minutes in an environment where I'm going to walk you through high-level steps of using VMM, using service templates to deploy and configure a load balanced tier and highly automate that. What we're going to talk in detail is basically configuring load balancer providers. In my case, I'm using NLB, so there's no provider I need to configure. So if you have a hardware load balancer like an F5, a Brocade, or a Citrix NetScaler, you will require a provider that plugs into VMM that enables communication to the load balancer to set up the VIP policies. We're going to create VIP templates that really define what's the protocol, what's the port that you want to load balance, and what's the specific load balancer to use. We're going to create a service template, we're going to deploy that service template and look into specific optional post-installation steps. And what those mean basically is we can deploy just a general software tier, two VMs, load balance it, but there's still no software installed. Right? And we want to achieve automation, meaning reducing the time that you spend on manually installing software on those servers. Specifically, when you're going to scale out, you want to make sure that the software is automatically deployed. We talked about the load balancer. Those are the load balancers that have been validated for 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager. There is a new company called, I just can't recall the name actually, that we're looking into right now for load balancers, but this is the technology in terms of third-party providers today. All right, with that, I'm going to flip over to a demo. All right. In order to show you how easy this is, basically, you just open Notepad and do like deploy web ha go. I was just kidding. Just catch you. Okay. Wish it would be that easy. Okay. So for those of you that have never seen the template designer, let me first bring up. The service template designer. And when you start the tool, it already asks you, you want to start from scratch, blank design, single tier, or you want to do two-tier or multiple-tier application deployment. Can be SQL backend, can be middleware, can be IIS frontend. So there are multiple options to deploy multi-tier services. What I want to show you is basically starting off with a straightforward single tier that is going to be load balanced. Is the size okay for you guys? In the back? Okay, good. All right, so what we're going to see here is basically a simple, it's a virtual machine showing us some configuration options for the VM, CPU, memory. It shows us information for the operating system. We can add applications. As I just mentioned, we obviously want to achieve the highest grade of automation. And we have the option to define what's the tier scale, what's the initial number of VMs, what's the minimum, what's the maximum number of VMs that will be deployable as part of this tier. And we're going to start by configuring the hardware configuration of that VM. How should those virtual machines look like? In order to just speed this up a bit, just increasing the number of CPUs, looking into memory, doing 2 gig of memory. We're not having a hard drive because it's pretty much a template. So what we're going to do is obviously we need to have a disk in our VMM library that is sysprep that we can leverage as a base. And the sysprep image can obviously already pre-contain your software tools that you have in your default base image, antivirus, operations manager agent. So all the regular agents and other software that you want to have in your image, you install it, you sysprep it, you copy it over to the VMM library, and you're ready to go. So in my case, I'm just picking a 2012 R2 VM. And as you have seen, what I'm doing here for my use is I'm tagging them by generation. So Hyper-V is supporting generation 1 and generation 2 virtual machines. Important note here, service templates today in 2012 R2 only support generation 1 virtual machines. So don't even try to deploy generation 2 virtual machines for those of you that are already on the Microsoft stack with Hyper-V and Virtual Machine Manager. And in the sake of time, I'm also going to use differencing disks. So when I'm going to deploy those VMs, what VMM will do is he will copy one base image. And for each VM that we create, we're creating a differencing disk. And all those differencing disks are just linking to that base image. That base image is read-only. And we're getting really fast provisioning times here. For load balancing, for NLB use, what I'm going to do is I need two network adapters. So one that is basically my backend, and the other one is my front end to load balance. In the architecture overview that I've showed you, there are different ways to deploy in terms of, do I have a DM set? Do I need to publish this to external? Am I only using it in my enterprise to create my on-premise environment? So in my environment, everything is on CorpNet, meaning the back end and the front end are both on the same network. So the VIP and the DIPs live on the same network. Just connecting them to my infrastructure network. This is my front-end adapter that will be leveraged for NLB. NLB, what you're going to see is we're not going to have any configuration options for NLB. NLB itself supports multiple ways to deploy. It supports a unicast mode, unicast, multicast, and I have no option to configure this part in VMM, so VMM will always deploy unicast, and I'm going to talk a bit the challenges with unicast later when we're going to look at that NLB cluster as soon as it is provisioned. From a Hyper-V, from a virtualization perspective, since it's deploying in unicast, NLB will override the MAC address on the adapter. So what we're going to need is MAC spoofing. So MAC spoofing is a hard requirement to do NLB deployments in Hyper-V. So we need to definitely enable MAC spoofing. What you have seen is what I have done is I flipped the IP address assignment to a static IP from an IP pool. So VMM is managing my IP pools. So when you install VMM and you add a host, what's going to happen is it will install a DHCP plugin into the switch extension of Hyper-V. So we're able to offer IPs to virtual machines. And this is exactly one thing I require for VIPs. I'm going to show you that in a second as well. With that, The last thing I'm going to do is I'm telling VMM, make this VM high available. I will place it on a cluster, so I will get the benefits of hardware failure, so it's hardware resilient. Next thing we do is we look into the operating system deployment. So what I'm going to do is just call this Thomas, and then we do SCU. So with the hashtag, basically, VMM will enumerate the number of VMs. So he will start with THO ROET-SCU301. The second one will be 302, and so on. So that's what the hashtag is used for. Just give it a local admin password. Skip the product key. You have the ability to do the time zone. And here's where it's getting interesting, where we dive a little bit. We're touching the application side. So what I want Virtual Machine Manager to do while deploying this VM, I want him to install the NLB feature. So it's not a role, it's a feature. So I want him to pre-install the feature. And as you can see, if you want to leverage service templates, I mean, there are multiple technologies that you can deploy with this. No, I mean, in my example, I'm going to use it for Windows Azure Pack, but you can already do this for remote desktop services that can run with NLB. So you just install the remote desktop session host role in this case. So what we're going to do is just enabling the load balancing, network load balancing feature. And for the purpose of the demo, I also want to install the remote server administration tools for the network load balancing to make sure I can show you what under the hood VMM created for us. And I'm going to do a domain join. And I'm going to use a pre-configured account for this. In the application configuration side, I'm not going to select anything other than flipping the operating system to 2012 R2 data center. I'm going to show you an extensive template afterwards. So hopefully, the screen resolution allows me to continue here. So we get that little nice drawing here. So let's see what changed. Before we started, we had only one network adapter. Now we're having two network adapters, and both are connected to a logical network that we selected called infrastructure. And in order to complete this, what I'm going to do is I'm adding a load balancer. So I get three new items here. I'm getting my client connection. Let me just move this over here. And we need the connector now to complete this configuration. So what we're going to do is, how will clients connect to that NLB? Well, they come through the infrastructure logical network. So we're drawing this connection here. And to complete this, we're drawing another connection between the server connection will be to the network adapter 2. That's the adapter, the backend adapter that we're going to use, or the front-end adapter that we're going to use for load balancing. Last but not least is basically the VIP policy. What ports do we want NLB to load balance? I got a big list of VIPs here, and I'm going to show you how to create a VIP as well. So in my case, I'm just using a demo VIP. It's load balancing a specific port. In this case, it's 3004. And you may now want to ask the question, well, what if an application requires multiple ports? Because it's a rare situation where you have an application only using a single port, like a web-based application that we have with Windows Azure Pack here. And I showed you the list earlier with the long list, the amount of ports that Windows Azure Pack requires. The true message here is Virtual Machine Manager does not give you the ability to configure additional VIP policies. So we can only have one VIP per backend network adapter. So as I said, in this case, I'm load balancing port 3004. if I'm requiring a second port for this application that I'm going to deploy here, I, from a VMAN perspective, I would need to add an additional network adapter to create, to add an additional VIP. Is this handy? Probably not, right? So what I'm going to show you is basically, and this is really where application deployment comes into play, NLB offers rich PowerShell support. So through PowerShell, we can add additional VIPs to that NLB, and I just call a PowerShell script as part of the application deployment to just configure additional ports. So we can all solve this. It's just not obvious when you first look into this and trying to create something like that. So now that we have finally configured the networking part, we still haven't configured what should be the tier scale. And what we're going to do here is basically, we're just reopening the configuration. What we're going to do is say this tier can be scaled out. We say the maximum number of instances should be 5. Default instance count, obviously we need 2 to load balance this service, and the minimum can be stick with 1. Upgrade domains does not come into play for a single tier application. If you have multiple tiers, then every tier should be its own upgrade domain. And I'm going to show you an example of that. This is an important setting as well, configuring an availability tier or an availability set for this tier. It really ensures that, in this case, the 2 VMs that I'm going to provision and load balance will be placed on different Hyper-V clusters. Because if you have a hardware failure, the VM will be restarted on another node, but you don't want to have a service outage. So we want to make sure that all the NLB members are distributed across different Hyper-V hosts. And with that, we have completed the basic configuration, and the template designer gives you the ability to save and validate the configuration. So we're good, we're having no errors, and we can go ahead and deploy this. So VMM offers you the ability to deploy a service template to a cloud or to a host group. So in my case, I'm going to deploy this to a host group, to my compute cluster host group. I give it a name, call it SCU demo. What's going to happen now is basically what you're going to see immediately is he's going to come back and say, hey, there are no suitable hosts found where to deploy this. So we first need to refresh. And what's going to happen, VMM has a review system, so it's going to, you can prioritize what's more important for you, CPU, RAM, memory. So he's looking into all your available hosts that are part of this host group in order to determine the best hosts for you to place those VMs. So he finished that. And we're ready to deploy that service. And I just keep this running now because I have already pre-deployed the same configuration already. So I just keep this running. So I promised I'm going to show you the creation of VIP templates. It's done pretty quick. So as you can see, I already have one. That's the one that we used in this example. I'm going to quickly walk you through creating a new one. What's the template name? Demo 2. What's the port that I want to load balance? Can be port 80 for a web server. And I can create, I have the choice to say this should be a generic VIP that works with multiple different load balancers if you have multiple load balancers in your environment. But it can also be a specific VIP that only works with a specific load balancer manufacturer. So in my case, as you can see, I only have Microsoft because there is no other load balancer that I have registered through a provider in VMM. And Microsoft also only has the NLB cluster. You can select the protocols, TCP, UDP, or both. And here's the important thing that I talked about during the presentation deck. You need to understand if sticky sessions are required. And this might be completely different from application to application. For Windows Azure Pack, I outlined the configuration settings in the deck. You can grab the deck later afterwards, I'm pretty sure. Otherwise, you let me know and I'm going to send it. Persistency settings, what is the persistency type? Source IP, subnet mask, single or network. So those are the deployment options. Let me just uncheck this. And this is it. And again, if you have to do multiple configurations, multiple VIPs, you always have the ability to do this through PowerShell. And VMware will tell you how to do this. Right, we can just create this. So let me switch to an already deployed example. It's the same example that I just configured together with you. As you can see, this is a service. We see the two VMs got deployed. What I'm going to do is I pick the 201 instance of this deploy and just connect to the console session of that VM. So let's find out what VMM did under the cover for us. So I'm bringing up Server Manager, opening the load balancing tool. So let's first figure out, we selected install the load balancing tools, so we definitely should see them. If not, something went wrong. So we have the Network Load Balancing Manager. So this is already an indication that VMM really did what we told him to do. And what we should see now here is that he's connecting to the NLB cluster that VMM created for us. And you can already spot this by just looking at the name, because it's tagging it by SCVMM. And it's also telling us what's the VIP IP. What's the IP that is used for load balancing. And if we're going to look in the details of this NLB cluster, what we're going to see here is basically the IP address. More important and more interesting is the cluster operation mode. And you see VMM always deploys in unicast mode. And why is unicast a challenge? Unicast worked really great in previous times. As of today's, probably the last couple of years, switches got more intelligent. So you get a more intelligent switches. So if your switch, if it gives you the ability to support IP flooding, but your switches, they are so intelligent today that they start learning the MAC address of the VIP IP. And this should never happen in any case, because what will happen is that the MAC address of the VIP IP will be stuck on a specific port and you're not getting any load balancing. So your best option is really coming back in here afterwards and switching to multicast. And hopefully your network supports doing multicast load balancing. I just wanted to mention that because we have been spending a ton of time on this with various network switches, and the experience is really sad, but unicast is no longer a good deployment option in a modern data center with really clever switches. And we see the port rules, and what you're gonna notice is here, basically, it's only one port. The port that we defined when we created the VIP. And I talked about we can leverage PowerShell to increase the number of ports because the application will require multiple ports. So let me gonna show you a quick example here by simply executing this PowerShell here. Let me just bring this up here. At least you see I'm not tricking in here because it's opening the first time, so it's pretty fresh deployment. Hey, there it goes. Okay. That's a script. It's not too fancy. So it's basically asking the NLB cluster for, hey, give me the NLB VIP address, the IP. And then it basically get the cluster at the port, at a port rule. That's my start port. That's the end port. That's the protocol. That's the mode. Affinity setting, it's either, and affinity is equal to persistence mode. So it's either none or single. And it configures a timeout value. And it's adding the VIP to that existing VIP IP address. All the ports that we're adding here are have been created for the Windows Azure Pack Express installation. Remember, Windows Azure Pack gives you two deployment options. Express, everything gets squeezed onto one box, or you get the distributed installation where everything gets distributed across multiple machines. So let me execute this example here pretty quickly. Let's run this. So by looking at the cluster properties, we should see additional ports coming in a second. And just keep this running, come back to this in a second. Let me swap back here to VMM directly. Let me show you a more advanced example. And I'm gonna walk you through this example. So we're gonna go back to the library, go to our service templates, and I'm gonna show you what we created for a privileged tier for Windows Azure Pack and the public tier. So the components that I showed you in Windows Azure Pack, like the admin side, tenant side, they should be split in two tiers. Basically, what we call a public tier, what is internet facing, that is obviously your tenant website, that is the tenant public API, and that's an authentication. So it can also be the web application proxy to do a pass-through authentication through your existing ADFS deployment. So this is what we call the public tier, and then we have what we call the privileged or private tier that deploys the admin side, admin API, admin authentication. And let me open this for you and give you a few how this looks. I hope that the screen resolution is even big enough to show this, right? So let's find out. Just optimize this here a bit. So this is a full scale out deployment of the privileged tier where we have the admin authentication, the admin side, the admin API, and the tenant API, everything that should be not internet facing, configured in a single service template. And every tier can be scaled individual. So if you're gonna look at the settings, we're gonna see every tier is an upgrade domain, so I can scale each individual tier. Let's assume you're increasing load, you're opening up the portals to additional divisions. You may require additional web service for servicing the website. So what you can simply do is basically scale the IIS front end, right? Increase from just the default instance count of two, increase it on the fly. And again, the intelligence comes with the application deployment. So let me look at the admin API and show you what we're gonna do as part of this deployment. So we have a tab for application configuration, and what you're gonna see here is that we're gonna call post-installation scripts. And what we're gonna do here is basically we call the web the web platform installer command line to pull down Windows Azure Pack and install Windows Azure Pack. We're gonna install and configure the admin API. So for those of you that have installed Windows Azure Pack before, after installation, it's opening a website and you need to specify that's the SQL server that I'm gonna use, that's my secure passphrase, and that's the user to connect to the SQL server. This is also be automated. We're going to install SQL extension. That's the resource providers. MySQL extensions. And this was a test here for just calling the command line. So let me show you how this looks like. Where are those scripts stored? So those scripts are also stored in the VMM library. And let me just bring up the library here. Nothing else than just simple batch files. It's nothing new. It's no specific coding that you need to learn. It's really just batch files that we call that are stored in a folder in the VMM library that are going to get called. We're placing the WPI launcher in there, the application for installing Windows Azure Pack, because we need to put this there, because what we're going to do is we first need to install a web platform installer in order to have the command lines available to install Windows Azure Pack. And in order to show this, let me go back and see how our deployment did here. See if that script finished. Still busy with it. Let's see if we can already see those properties. Still busy, okay, no problem. I did not expect to go this quick. So for those of you that have never used the WebPI, the WebPI web platform installer, I'm going to require and quickly install this to show you the artifacts that we're going to use in the automation piece. It's a free download, no surprise, hopefully. This is it. That's the reason I really wanted to put it into the demo, because I wanted to make sure everybody understands this is just a very simple, small UI wrapped around some tools to download bits from the web directly. This is it. So if you're going to do this through UI, if you never installed Windows Azure Pack, you go into Products, Windows Azure, and we have the Windows Azure Pack components. As I said before, every component that I talked today about that is on the slide decks, you're going to find again in the WebPI installer. But what I'm looking for is the Express installation. And hopefully I can spot it. If not, it's not a problem, because it is there. So I'm not going to leverage the UI, so I'm just going to exit the UI. What I'm going to do is basically I'm going to call the command line. This is really the same artifact that I'm putting into the service template to install Windows Azure Pack as part of my service template deployment. And what I'm doing is I'm calling the WebPI command line install. What's the product I want to install? It's Windows Azure Pack Portal and API Express, and I'm going to accept the EULA. That's all what it is about. So let me quickly kick this off. In the sake of time, I'll just check. It's not going to finish anyway. As I said before, after the installation of Windows Azure Pack, what we need to do is basically initialize Windows Azure Pack, configuring it, telling Windows Azure Pack that's your SQL database back or SQL backend that you want to use. And this is the secure passphrase. And again, we have PowerShell available to automate this as well. Let me just quickly show you that command line here as well. So we're initializing the product. We're specifying the secure passphrase. Make sure you never lose this. We're specifying the connection string. I'm connecting against a SQL server, and I'm using SQL authentication, using the SA user, and using the specific password for it. This is it. Usually it takes 3 minutes, and this is done, and Windows Azure Pack is completely configured and up and running. Are you done at this stage? The answer is no. And you may ask why. And let me just flip back here to the slide deck. This is the script example. I put it in the slide deck as well, so you can reuse this for later usage when you pull down the deck that I have been showing you. Certificates. And that's really the reason why you still have some work to do. And Windows Azure Pack is heavily using Internet Information Server. It's all HTTPS encrypted. It's using certificates. And those certificates are the installer creates self-signed certificates out of the box. And every installation creates a certificate with a different thumbprint. So what you're going to end up is basically node 1, node 2 in your NLB farm. And every service has a different certificate. And if you're now going to try to browse this, it will naturally end up in a mess. So what you have to do is basically, my recommendation, get a wildcard certificate, either internal CA or from external. Use a wildcard certificate to replace the certificates in all the components on your NLB members, and you're good to go, almost. Because you also have to run a configuration script to tell Windows Azure Pack you're now a load balanced service. In the database, what the script does is basically it goes in the database and is replacing the host name with the VIP. So what you have to do is in your DNS, create a name, SCU, tenant portal, points to the VIP IP from NLB. And this host name that we just created in DNS needs then be added to the script as a parameter. That kind of script is made available from one of our colleagues. Let me just go on here. The guy is called Peter Hesse. He created a script. He put it out on Gallery Technet item. The reason I would not recommend putting it in the installer is really it's a one-time operation telling Windows Azure Pack you're now load balanced, because we store the settings, the values in the database. So it's a one-time job. So you run this script only once. So you don't need to run it every time you scale out the tier. So it's a one-time job to run those scripts. And this pretty much brings me to the end of this talk. I want to thank you for attending this session. I'm talking tomorrow about, look at this as a part one. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about multi-site deployments, deploying Windows Azure Pack in multiple sites and everything that you learned or we talked about for making the Cloud OS stack high available really applies into a multi-site deployment. Thanks for joining this session. If you have, questions, you want to talk, just check by. I'm around the entire day tomorrow, so feel free to join by. Thank you.